Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
From Joy 94.9 Community Radio, this is the Joycast of The Fool and the Opera. In this Joycast, you'll get to hear an exclusive extended version of the weekly feature interview.
The Fool and the Opera with Dan Vaux.
This is Joy 94.9. You're on The Fool and the Opera. Cynthia McCreece is known for her wonderful interpretations of some of opera's most intriguing and difficult heroines. She debuted as Tragic Tosca, is well known for her seductive Salome, and came to international acclaim as Cruel Lady Macbeth. Cynthia is powerful, thrilling, highly emotive, and subsequently in great demand, having performed in all the corners of the world. From London to Tokyo to Rio de Janeiro, Cynthia was recently in Australia to perform Turandot. Cynthia, thanks for joining me on the show.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
Now, in this version by Graham Murphy, which is absolutely amazing, Turandot literally towers above the people of Peking. Cynthia, before you came to Australia, did you have any idea what they were going to make you do?
Well, no, actually, I hadn't the vaguest idea, no. I'd worked with Graham once before. I did Salome with him in Melbourne, I think 15 years ago. So I knew of his extremely high standards. I knew how demanding he was and what a perfectionist. So I was somewhat prepared.
What is it that you're actually on, that they're spinning you around on?
Well, this is very high tech. It's just a cart. It has some extremely skilled dancers underneath.
It must be difficult to be singing so high up as well.
I would have thought so. But, you know, she's so cool and she's so isolated. And also, I have to wait backstage all strapped into this with people sort of fussing with my dresses and things. And for me, it's quite a nice entry into the character, particularly in this production, obviously, because I get this kind of extra victimhood. It's like, oh, here I am being carted out once again. So actually, it's a nice preparation. I don't mind it at all.
So you're not afraid of heights then?
No, not up until now.
The Brisbane Courier Mail has reported that you have a mission to sing the big, mean women in opera and to find the human qualities in them. Turandot must be one of the meanest women that you've played.
My lot, and sort of started to enjoy it, so yes.
Okay.
Well, you know, when I started to look at the role, I thought, no, she's very boring because she's got one color. It's just, she's cruel, she's mean, there's nothing to her besides that. But when I really started to rehearse it, I absolutely fell in love with her because ideally, you know, I don't know if I always can do this, but ideally, I would play her very young and very fragile with a lot of external power. And she's misunderstood by everyone, including by herself. She's pretty much locked in a little prison where she has very few choices, even though she's apparently a very powerful person. But she has almost no choices from the outside world, and from her inside workings, she's got even fewer choices. So I do sympathize with her a lot.
Now, for me, in Questa Regia and Straniero Ascolta are the two standout arias for Turandot, and they're also quite different in feeling. Yet they're sung one after another. Can you tell me what the emotions you're going through during these arias?
When In Questa Regia starts with that little chord and that very Chinese-sounding little chord, it's just, for me, this is a magical moment. This sets the whole tone. Calaf has walked into a kingdom which is totally foreign to him, and it should have somehow this charm and perfume and mystery of something that maybe he's too crude for, that he doesn't fit in. Everyone else has these amazing manners, and he doesn't have them. He doesn't have the inside track to this society. And Turandot should actually epitomize this mystery and distance. So that's what I'm feeling when I start. She sets the tone. This is the story. This is where we've been. You don't know anything about this place because you haven't lived here. So you walking in proud and blustering, you don't understand. So that's how I started.
And what about towards the end?
This is the interesting thing, I think, that Turandot thinks she's cold. Everyone thinks she's cold. But she's got so much inner fire that she is almost like a volcano out of control. So the longer she tells the story, the more she gets associated with it, the more involved she gets, the more she identifies with it. And something about this man standing in front of her, defying her, makes her even more fiery. So by the time she gets to the end of the aria, she is just explosive and living this story and feeling the feelings and challenging him. And when he challenges her back, it's just, it's like the War of the Titans. You can imagine what kind of marriage this is going to be. It's not going to be easy for either one.
When you're singing, do you keep emotions at bay, or do you actually like to experience them?
I like to indulge in them. Okay. Now, there are things where you absolutely have to, you know, stop. I have to stop myself. I used to sing Violetta very, very often. And I used to sing Butterfly, if you can imagine that. And really, the emotions will become so overwhelming that, you know, you can't sing anymore, so then you have to stop. But basically, I like emotions.
Are they any different when you're singing opposite your husband, Remo Cerca?
Well, yes, obviously. If he could hear this interview, I would have to say, oh my God, yes, it's much better. Well, we suit each other in private life, so obviously there's something about our temperaments that suits each other. And it's an easy match, and of course I trust him, I know what to expect. But you don't have to be personally involved with a partner to make things work on stage. I mean, it has a lot to do with fantasy, of course. And both people playing the same game.
The musicologist Joseph Kerman, in critiquing the opera as a flawed drama, wrote that Turandot's surrender at the end has no motivation except the physical. As Turandot, do you disagree with that?
Absolutely. 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 I think the first melting of Turandot is when Calaf has won fair and square, and it was a tough game, and he won fair and square, and he shows this incredibly soft, vulnerable side of himself, because he feels her vulnerability. He actually feels it, and she responds. Something in her just opens and starts to melt when he says, okay, I'll give you a chance, guess my name. And if you get it, then I'll die. It just, something in her melts. So I think that's maybe 90% of what happens. And of course, then Liu being actually, for me, I think Liu becomes for Turandot the Princess Lo Ling. So she becomes Turandot's idol, and Turandot has to rethink everything. It turns Turandot's world upside down, because suddenly there's someone who's loving and warm and giving, and it seems to work for her. It's a very tricky thing. So no, I don't think it's just the physical. The physical is obviously there. I think these two people, when Calaf sees her, there's something magnetic that he can't be freed from. And the same thing happens to Turandot. She doesn't want it, but it happens.
You've played a lot of Puccini women, Strauss women, and Verdi women. You've got the tragic side versus the big, mean women side. What actually appeals to you most?
You know, I actually love both. When I was studying, I wanted to be a history professor. I lost interest in music because I was too interested in everything else. But I would write my history papers listening to La Forza del Destino and Norma. So obviously the tragic side is the most interesting to me. I have to say that.
You said that you lost interest for a while in music. What music do you actually like? You know, what sort of music is in your head when you're not on stage?
Wow, I like a lot of different things.
Yeah.
I like so many different things. That I must say this job has been really good for me, because it's a job where you absolutely have to focus on one thing. So I very often do not have any music playing when I'm by myself, because I like to get some inner peace and let the music that I'm either learning or performing kind of settle inside, go into my blood. But I like everything from Alban Berg to, you know, Creedence Clearwater Revival. I like music.
You said that you like to find peace. Meditation and yoga are very important to you, aren't they?
Yes, I absolutely swear by meditation. Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. Gives me focus, gets rid of a lot of the distractions. I actually do believe that, you know, there's a little bit more to life than just the material world that we have around us. So, yeah, it's kind of a mission also.
Okay, well, let's go back for a moment. Back to the age of six when you dreamed of being a wrestler.
Yeah, right. Well... Yeah, okay. So anyway, you're helping me bring this together. Basically, the tragic, the helpless, the waiting for somebody to help her out of a situation, I would say that would be most of my personality. So most of my little girlhood, I was spent, you know, pretending I was a princess and somebody was going to rescue me, pretty much. But there was this underlying strain of wanting strength. So thinking, oh, I'd be an athlete and I could do anything physically. So there was that. And I wasn't athletic, but there was that desire to be strong.
In many ways, singing opera is a very athletic art anyway.
Oh, God, yes.
Mm. Yes. Well, I thought, you know, being a wrestler would give you an unfair advantage over Scarpia in Tosca.
Haven't you seen those performances? This humongous woman in Scarpia is the poor little guy. You cannot possibly understand how he's not winning. Yes.
I've read that you played the piano as a child, and this is where you feel that you learnt discipline.
I played the piano as a child. I think I learned discipline in piano first when I got to college, and I had a really tough teacher, and then I made amazing progress. I needed discipline from the outside. I definitely needed discipline from the outside. I lived in Germany for many years. That definitely did give me discipline also. Now I've internalized it. I really have this motor drive in me that can focus and, you know, do what I want to do.
Is it something you've kept up, playing the piano?
Well, I'll tell you, I would like to take it up again. I play the piano for myself, to go through my own music for my own pleasure, but it could be a lot more pleasurable if my technique were better.
I think I'm the same with piano as well.
Yes, as is it.
Can you tell me what your first opera experience was? Do you remember it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I grew up in a tiny town where there was, you know, there was music. I did everything that was involved with music that was available to me because it was my love. But I didn't hear anything from an opera until I was 20 years old. And I heard another student singing Pace Pace. Mm. And I was just lost. That was it for me. So there was no turning back after that.
This inspired you to do singing as a career?
Yeah, it was just, I had to do it. I just had to do it. I really didn't have a choice about it. I just had to do it. I think it was all, it was the emotions that I went through when I heard that.
It was in Denver that you debuted as Tosca in 1979.
Yes.
In 2009, that makes it 30 years of singing. If you were to go back in time,
yes.
What words of advice would you offer to yourself 30 years ago?
30 years ago.
And I'm sure it doesn't seem that long either.
Well, time is relative. Sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't. I think I had a lot of luck. I had a lot of luck because I had a teacher who forced me to tear out my roots and risk, you know, going to another continent to sing. And I had the love for singing that was strong enough that that was more important than everything I was leaving behind, which at that point was considerable, emotionally considerable. So I think I was just lucky, and I was also lucky debuted with Tosca. I mean, please, I didn't sing Tosca again for many, many years. That was lovely to do, but I had people who said, oh my God, no, you should be doing Constanza, Violetta, Rosalinda, Lucia, and I did these things at the beginning, so I'm lucky that somebody else gave me that advice then.
Mm. You teach now as well.
Yes, I've started teaching, and I've absolutely fallen in love with it. So it feels like my new identity. It's really just something I adore. I resisted teaching for a very long time. I had this image in my mind of the music teacher just sort of being a disciplinarian, and it wasn't a very inspiring picture I had. But I finally gave in and started teaching. In fact, all my students are sopranos. I may branch out if I feel competent, but I absolutely adore teaching. It's just so lovely to feel competent and to watch people become empowered. I guess that's why I like teaching. Yes, I like to empower people. So I try to be as clear as possible and give them as much as they need to be free and to have technique. After love of the art, technique is the most important thing.
So freedom is something that you look to teach your students, this notion of uprooting yourself and finding your career.
Yes, I would give this advice to anyone who really wants to sing, that recognize if it's your first priority or not, because you may have to leave your homeland. It seems to work out better. It's easier to leave and go someplace else. It's been my experience. Other people have other experiences.
Mm. Well, with the leaving, there is always this the joy of coming back.
So that's right. And being much more valued when you come back.
That is very true. Well, Cynthia, thank you for joining me on the program. Before you go, do tell me what the future holds for you. Will you be coming back to Australia?
I certainly hope so. Okay. Yes, I would love to come back.
Is there something you'd like to come back as?
Wow. Huh. No, nothing specific. Nothing specific. Not putting myself out there. No.
Okay, excellent. Well, thank you so much. It was such a pleasure, Cynthia.
Thank you, Dan. This has been really fun.
Thanks for listening to the Joycast of The Fool and the Opera from Joy 94.9 Community Radio. You can find more Joycasts and the program blog at joy.org.au/The Fool and the Opera. The Fool and the Opera is produced by Dan Vo and Jed Gilbert, thanks to the support of Joy's sponsors and members. Please help support it by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.